The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Good evening and welcome to Desert Island Discs. I'm Flavia Tumusiime Kabura, and every single Sunday, stories are told. It's always a pleasure to have you. If you've missed any of our past shows, not to worry. Anywhere you get podcasts, just look for Capital FM Uganda and voila, you have it. This evening, I'm hosting someone who's actually committed to creating green jobs. I think we'll get into that at some point. He's the CEO and founder or co-founder of EcoBricks or EcoBricks, whichever way you want to see that. Andrew Bounds. Your name is B-O-W-N-D-S.
Correct.
And nobody ever says Bounds.
Like, people do. Yeah. They're pronounced Bounds, yeah.
It's Bounds.
Quite a unique surname, that one.
Yes. Welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. We are excited to hear about your story. The journey or the story of EcoBricks is how long? How many years?
We started in 2017.
Oh, okay.
So coming up six years, yeah. Six and a bit years now.
Okay, so we'll get to that part. Let's go back to the beginning. Take us to, you know, anywhere in your childhood, really. Just pick a memory and let's start your story there or your journey.
Okay. Mm. Pick any memory.
Mm-hmm.
Dating any distance back.
Yeah, I mean, you could be 3 months old past. If you've got a memory to that.
Okay,
point.
Okay. Now, I'll tell you what, I'll take you back because I definitely wasn't a entrepreneur,
okay,
or have any like paperwork qualifications
to be a businessman
at all. And in fact, I was a professional clown, the proper red nose,
the ones who paint their faces.
Oh yeah,
no way.
Yeah, full on
with the afro.
I didn't always have a wig, but sometimes okay. I would wear a brightly colored wig.
When you say professional, that means like you had gigs,
yeah.
And you. Wow.
Thank you for calling it a gig as well, because that makes it sound cool.
It is a job.
Yeah. And it was a job. And I mainly worked in hospitals. And I worked
in
children care.
Right.
Yeah, and worked in hospitals in different parts of the world. And I went by Sox, S-O-X. So hence the X on the end of EcoBricks as well.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a transition there.
Where are you born?
Born in the UK, just outside of London.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, I can see how anybody can end up, you know, anything, a lawyer, a pilot, a radio host, heck, even a painter. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how somebody ends up as a clown.
So I ended up as a clown because I cannot sing. So I did a lot of drama and acting and things when I was younger.
Okay.
And then I went for like musicals and was like, if I could sing, then, you know, the world is my oyster at this point.
Yes.
And I went to a teacher that said anyone could sing. Three lessons in, she said, took me aside and went, this isn't for you, Andy.
Anyone can sing but you.
But you was the message I received. And I'd already signed into this group. So the only space left on another group was clowning. So I shifted to
that's how.
And that's how it went really well. Yeah, turns out I'm a natural for that.
What about family? What did mom and dad do?
So mum worked in residential homes,
okay.
So caring for the elderly,
right.
And she was an activities organiser. Mm-hmm. And I actually did a lot of clowning gigs in her home when I was starting out. And my dad did a lot of drama when he was young, but then worked as an office manager in a building firm, building firm in the UK.
So the creative, the narco fun was there in the family.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, being silly is definitely part of being a bounce.
Calling just, it being silly.
Yeah, just being
I was
silly.
To say creative.
No, clowning is about channeling being silly.
I mean, I feel like because I've had parties where we have, you know, kids and you have a clown.
Yeah.
And the whole entire time thinking, that's just like, that's the hardest job. I'm a parent, so I know to keep a child entertained is not easy. What's the art to clowning or to being a clown? Okay, in this way.
So
get the attention.
Yeah. I think the art is to have a few tricks literally up your sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you avoid those tricks as long as possible, then you're just taking the kid's lead and having fun with it. Because all kids have an amazing imagination.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you can tap into that and then start playing around their own, and they're leading the skits and the play and sort of enjoying it.
You build onto their world. You build onto their imagination.
That's when it's working, yeah.
Must you like children to be in that profession?
I think so. I think it would be pretty hard to do it and not.
If you don't.
If you're just
you could like the money.
I wouldn't say it's that well paid. So I wouldn't think anyone's doing it for the dollar.
So it wasn't the money.
It wasn't the money, no.
And how old were you doing this?
I did that on and off till I was about 24.
What?
Yeah, on and off.
And
yeah.
at no point were your peers thinking, Andrew, why?
Oh, constantly. Yeah, constantly. Yeah,
did you lose friends? Because I can't imagine if a friend of mine decided that's a thing, that's their calling. Yeah, they're going to just do that.
I don't think I lost any friends, but probably lost some girlfriends who were just like, dude, clowning, really?
Was there any other option, though?
I did that on mainly at one point during in my 20s on the weekends.
Okay.
As I worked during the week, and I was sort of trying to break into different industries. So
right.
was even trying to volunteer at businesses or do internships mm-hmm. and different things. And that's when the weekend was where I earned the money.
It's a bit of money, yeah. Exactly. And what about for school? What did you know? Where was your interest or strength even?
Yeah, so I focused on sport and drama at school, really. Not that academic.
That's honest.
Yeah, it's the truth.
That's honest. Focused on
drama and sport up all the way through university as well. Yeah,
so you wanted to end up somewhere acting or singing clearly was off the table.
Was off the table.
But anyway, in drama or acting, why did you not pursue that anyway? Because I can get when someone says you can't sing in a musical, but you can still act.
Yeah. But I don't think it was... that was ever going to be a massive career path for me.
Okay.
It was just something I was good at. So I was very...
So you say the academics, good. No, but I'm good at sport and I'm good at drama.
Exactly.
So I'll just do that to get the grades.
You know, that's... Yeah, exactly that. But they're not easy to make a career of because you've got to be in that, you know, that top percent
exactly.
to be able to make it.
If it's sport, you've got
career.
To be dedicated. What sort of sport were you trying out?
I did a bit of everything. I was at university. I was in the volleyball, football. I even had a bit of basketball team.
Okay.
I played a bit of table tennis. So any sport.
But you weren't in the 1%.
I was not. I was never the best player.
Okay.
I was never the worst, but I was never the best player in any
right,
of those.
No. Right. I want to hear your first song choice.
I'm My first sure song choice us, will yeah. be Salty Soul, and it will be Isabella.
Oh, Isabella.
Like yeah, exactly.
Nice song. I love Salty Soul, so I'm biased.
Yeah, it's my girlfriend's favorite song.
Oh, so, bless.
It's become one of my favorite songs as well.
Okay.
Shout out to Alice Akonji on that.
Okay.
Hey, Isabella, how you gonna come out and dance with me tonight? The stars look beautiful outside. So, so beautiful. Tell your mama I said sorry, I didn't bring you home early last time and I was a little tipsy. I know she doesn't miss me, so put on those shoes that I like and we'll go and dance the night away. Away, yeah. Because YOLO, YOLO, you only live once, so oh. And me, I wanna have some fun. Punjami fupa kama meno iko. Up and away we go. And spend all my money on you, baby, cause I can't take it with me when I'm dead. So tonight, tonight, we are young, high, and in love. Isabella, one day I'll be a superstar. We'll go to America, a big show in a stadium. Woo 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 woo. Isabella, today we boda boda. Tomorrow we motoka. So put on that dress that hugs you tight, and we'll go and dance the night away, away, away with you. YOLO, YOLO, you only live once, so me, I wanna have some fun. Punja mi fupa kama belo iko. Up and away we go and spend all my money on you, baby. Cause I can't take it with me when I'm dead. So tonight, tonight, we are young, high, and in love. YOLO, YOLO, you only live once, so me, I wanna have some fun. Punja mi fupa kama belo iko. Up and away we go and spend all my money.
Silent Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs. That was Sauti Sol Isabella. Not his favorite, but his girlfriend's favorite. So become, by default, become. His favorite exactly. as well. Andrew Bounds, who's the CEO and co-founder of Echo Bricks. And before the break, your story, well, you had taken us to, you know, your teenage into your 20s, where you had decided to be a professional clown because, I mean, let's be honest, you couldn't sing. Well, you thought you could sing.
I believe
that. But the teacher said, and I won't, you know, I won't give you that hard task of actually singing for us so we can be judges. I won't do it. So, fine, sport, no, drama, you're only doing it just for the grades. When you got to university, what did you pursue?
So, yeah, no, still
drama and sport.
Drama and sport, yeah.
Really? You were just going with the flow.
Yeah. Because I didn't have the grades to do any engineering
right.
or a doctor or a lawyer or, mm-hmm. or any of those sort of renowned professions. Mm-hmm. But throughout, I always worked with sort of vulnerable people. That was my passion.
Right.
And I hate that term, to be fair. It's a bit of a rubbish term. But I worked in mental health a lot.
Okay.
And even with drama, I worked in prisons. I worked in what was called a pupil referral unit for kids kicked out of schools, and then mental health institutions. And you can—it's amazing what you can, if you have a passion, how you can guide it to fit into what you want to do.
So
my skill was drama, but my passion was working in these sectors, and I was able to sort of
people.
People connect with people. Way of the world.
Have you? Over time, of course, maybe then you didn't really know, but have you over time figured out what about you or in you kind of gravitated towards people in this way?
That is a good question. I think when I was, so this would be going further back.
Right.
So we're skipping back in time mm-hmm. again. I guess at school, I was picked on quite a bit at school when
bullied.
I was in, bullied when I was quite young. So, you know, like 9, 10, that sort of maybe
right.
up to the early teenagers, and changed school quite a bit because of that.
Oh, wow.
So I think that sort of made me understand how tough it is if you are
on
even
the other
in,
side.
And I know school, it happens to everyone, but I guess it was some places reasonably.
I mean, if you
extreme.
Were changing schools because of this, that's a lot.
There was a few incidences. Mm. So I think that made me just always feel passionate about the people that were justice for people that were not necessarily getting the opportunity.
Not treated fairly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Interesting. But then for me, I've always felt like in a place where I'm hurt or triggered, I tend not to, not empathize, I do, but I tend not to try to go there with somebody else because that sort of evokes in me or triggers in me what I've not dealt with. Do you know what I mean? So if I was somebody who felt fear in how people talk to me, I would not seek out to help somebody else because I'd be like, oh my God, then I'd have to deal with it because I'm helping somebody else deal with it. Did you ever get that?
Like, I guess I did have an incredible family.
Oh, great.
And as I finally found my place in the school, I got an incredible group of mates. Mm. So I think that made it just easier. And I sort of dealt with it maybe at an earlier age
right.
to be able to just then... Yeah, just reflect on it.
Reflect on that.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you then curve it out, or did you not pursue that? So now you're going to, you know, prisons or places for, you know, children or whatever, and you're kind of seeing that, okay, I like people, I like doing this for people, this is where I kind of make an impact. Did you build onto that?
Yeah, so I realized that if I really wanted to have an impact, I had to have more skills than drama and sport.
And sport.
And to be able to build stuff. So I managed to wangle my way in to working in a mental health organization in London. Mm-hmm. And then within that, I quickly was able to climb the ranks quite rapidly. And by the time I think I was 26, mm-hmm. Just before I moved to Uganda, 26, 27, mm-hmm. I was managing quite a large mental health array of institutions. So I was managing multiple mental health institutions in London.
Mm-hmm. What years this is back
this is,
to?
Yeah, 20 when I was 26, 10 in 27, 27 I think maybe.
Yes.
So when
this
was
is about I don't know.
I'm 35.
Okay,
there you go. There's some context. There's some context there.
Right.
So that.
And I only ask that because for mental health, and of course, having worked in that category, you understand that for parts like Uganda, for example, mental health didn't necessarily, to term it mental health and to define it, and didn't really, wasn't there a couple of years ago. Sometimes it was, people were just shunned. I'm like, why do you feel like that? Yeah. Until people said to define it.
Yeah.
But of course, for the rest of the world, mental health was something. What did you learn about? Because, you know, for mental health, even today when people say mental health, somebody just thinks anxiety, depression, and there's so much more.
It's massive. It's a huge force.
Yes. What did you learn getting in that you probably even surprised you?
There's so many flaws in... It's not easy to diagnose a mental health because you often require someone to come to you. The cases I worked in were a bit different because it was... It was called forensic mental health, so it means they've committed a crime. So then they've been sectioned, which is a process in the UK.
Yes.
Of you get sectioned. And
so you
then,
go to court and claim insanity.
Or they've had a psychologist look at them during that process and they've been
diagnosed.
They did
this because they're this way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And then they would go into a secure mental health ward, and then we were their first point of call outside of that mental health ward. So it was some very, very very intense moments, for sure. And I was part of what was called a float and advanced support team for a while before I became into a management role, managing a few units. Mm-hmm. And there you would be called when people were in crisis. So I think, although my mental health knowledge is still very limited, but I learned to deal with a lot of pressure because we would go into situations where there would be knives drawn on us. We would be potentially cutting people down who were trying to hang themselves. Patching people up who have done self-harm, lots and lots of extreme situations where you have to remain constantly calm. So there's this sort of image of a swan on a lake. A swan on the lake above it looks so beautiful.
Yeah, but it's
calm.
Paddling at the
exactly,
bottom.
Exactly, yeah, you've heard the one. So paddling its legs. And that was that is social work in a nutshell in those intense scenarios. So, yeah, all sorts of things going on. And it really allows you to learn how to channel in that sort of calmness
around who you're trying to help anyway.
Which hopefully allows you to make the right decisions in stressful situations, because you kind of have to in those cases.
That's true. Yeah. What would be your second song choice at this point?
Second song choice, we will go with Here Comes the Sun on the Beatles. Classic.
Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs. You're joining me. I also have the co-founder and CEO of Ecobricks, Andrew Bounds. And before the break, we're talking about his social work. That really ended up being his thing, his calling, people. And mental health is where your social work took you. I think a couple of months back, I had one of my guests who really had found their calling in social work because their father was a politician. They said, I tried to be a politician and then I realized I like people. So I'll find my way into liking people. It was social work. But then at some point I asked who then, sort of like you therapize other people, but who therapizes you, you know? Is there a system where even as you do your work, you know that it has to turn back and we have to also get helped?
Yeah. There isn't enough, to be honest. Or at that time, this was some years back, obviously. So I'm sure it's improved already. But I remember at the time, there isn't enough of that. Mm. And it becomes a proper 24/7 job. In some cases. You'll be getting calls at all hours of the night because someone has gone into crisis here or into crisis there. And then you either have to get up out of bed or organize the systems from there. Mm. I think there definitely could be more
done.
More there. But again, as long as you have a good group of mates, and I was always very lucky to have amazing family support, I think that can carry
that
a long way.
I think no one ever asked that. The doctor treats you, but who treats the doctor?
You know? It's not a doctor's, what an intense job, eh? It's literally life and death every day.
Yes.
So that must take a toll. So yeah,
it's big. So how long did you do the social work for, you said?
I broke into it maybe when I was 23. Mm-hmm. And then
that was young, you know.
It was young. So I think I got in because I had the word hospital on my CV and they didn't quite read clown after it. So they read hospital and didn't quite get to the hospital clown.
Said he did some work in the hospital. They just didn't really read what kind of work he did.
So I think they were just looking for buzzwords and CVs and I got away with it. And then interview, it was all right.
Wow. And so you did that until you said you came to Uganda?
Until I came to Uganda, yes.
What brought you to Uganda?
So it was always part of the plan.
Okay.
Not necessarily Uganda, but just somewhere with nice weather. Nice people, and also the ability to utilize the skills I had had at that time to try and, I don't like the term to try and make a difference. It's a bit cheesy, but to try and do something. At that time, I probably thought to make a difference, but now I'm a bit more mature and understand that.
The reality of making
a difference is not the way
I get that you wanted to go somewhere with good weather, and you're welcome. We do have fantastic weather.
It's incredible.
But how do you then look at the map and pick us out of everywhere?
So that was by chance. So I met a friend of a friend. Mm. At a party on a boat, there's these parked boats in London where they turn them into residents. It's a bit random.
Right.
I met a friend of a friend on a boat there, and he was organizing an event called the Uganda Marathon in Uganda, and he was just looking for people to join the team as a founder in that. And I was like, yeah, all right, yeah.
I'll go.
I was preparing for some sort of trip, and it timed perfectly.
Right.
So he knew people in Masaka by chance. So
tell me that was your first stop, Masaka.
That was my first stop.
Oh, good.
I literally went from the airport straight to Masaka.
Masaka.
And I've lived there ever since. So it's...
Oh, wait, of course.
Yeah.
You came from Masaka to come for this.
So
you came from the airport. You came from the UK, let's just say to Masaka, right?
Yeah.
What did you think? Be honest.
I was so buzzing. Everything was really exciting.
Really?
The greenery on the road. Yeah. I'm quite into my bird life, so seeing all the birds and that was incredible. I can tell you one funny story, actually. So I went out, what I thought was going to be for a night out, and I carried a bit of booze in my bag, and I was like, I'm going to go for a drink in town. And I heard some music playing, and I was just like completely fresh off the plane, basically, in Masaka, thinking I need to go out and meet people. So I was walking along, and heard this music playing and thought, okay, I'll just head towards that.
Yeah, like, must be buzzing.
Must be buzzing. Wandered in the back, and it was a big old gospel church, and I was just wandered in the back with a drink, and was like, I've come into the wrong place. But it was like one in the morning. But you know, the churches sometimes.
Of course, they go overnight.
I just wandered in there, and that was.
Did you stay?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. That wouldn't have been.
You had booze in your hands.
That wouldn't have been the right thing to do. So, but no, I did end up finding somewhere. But it was quite a funny one.
So you come for a marathon. I mean, of course, that happened.
Yeah.
And that ended, and everybody's packing up to say we're going back to the UK. Yeah. And your choice is to
stay, because we ran that marathon every year up, and it's still going. Actually, it's still going. It'll be back next year, and it was a big success. So it raised a lot of money for supporting
the community,
little enterprises in the community. Mm-hmm. I think in total it was like 1.5 million pounds raised. So it was a lot
pounds.
Of money.
Yeah, oh,
yeah,
yeah,
a lot of money raised over the years. So then it was at the end of the first one, the team were all packing their bags, ready to go back. And they were like, does anyone want to stay and sort of run the foundation? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So that was
it. To run the foundation.
Yeah,
to run the foundation. You know, because I thought it was just to stay.
And I was like, yeah, I'll run that.
I'll do it.
And it was very small at the time. Mm. And then it grew and grew. And then obviously the COVID pandemic happened and events and it was a sort of events tourism element, so that sort of collapsed. But it's bouncing back now, so that's exciting. But yeah, so and then I just stayed.
So you ran the foundation.
Yeah, I ran that foundation.
I mean, I can see how anybody would fit in to Kampala if you left anywhere, the UK, whatever. Because I mean, you just run to the mall and get whatever you want to get. Masaka is Masaka.
Masaka.
You know,
but Masaka's
it can be good.
It's good,
but it can also be. Yeah. Scary if you're not used to it, or if you can't adapt
to a certain life. Maybe if you can't adapt. You know? I've been lucky enough to travel a lot, mainly with a clowning, going to different parts of the world as a hospital clown, but also, just backpack and different things. So I think I was able to adapt reasonably quickly.
I mean, I one thing I like about us Ugandans is that we people can adapt to us, but also we're very hospitable. Anybody can live here.
Big time.
You know, it's good for you. You want to live here, live here. But get it, because you don't speak Luganda.
Katono.
Okay, yeah. Katono. And that part of Uganda is not necessarily one that you'd find that much English. Have they tried to push you to learn the language?
Yeah, I can learn a bit, you know. I can get by at the market. And
Penyanya, Tungurus.
But not a huge amount more. And I can understand a lot more than I can.
Good.
I can speak, so often I catch out the team if they're talking away. I can respond in English, and they're like, so that works quite well. But still, English is so widely spoken.
Like I said, anybody can live here.
Yeah, it makes
anyone
it so easy.
Can live in Uganda, and that's pretty much. And outside of just saying that you came for the foundation, you loved the people and everything, just also speak to us on what you liked that made you feel like this isn't such a bad decision to stay. I can actually make a life, or even if business or whatever, in this country.
Yeah, I think there's such an entrepreneurial spirit in Uganda. Like everyone has like their side business.
Yeah.
Like, and I always find that incredible. Like no one does that in the UK. Like
really?
So rare that you have, like you've got your main job and then you're doing a little
something
extra
on the
something.
Side,
literally everyone.
Has another source of income.
Yeah, has their main job and then another thing they're doing.
Yeah.
Whether that's rearing some chickens, goats.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever it might be, you'll know them all. And I think that was what was really inspiring. So just hearing, we built up a team around the marathon and hearing all their stories, and I was like, why don't I have a side business?
I want a side hustle too.
Yeah. What's going on?
I hear you.
So then I was, started looking at those sort of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And became a fish farmer for a while.
Oh, is that where you started?
Yeah, that's where I started, yeah. That was a mistake. I quickly
that was a
realized,
mistake.
Yeah,
it's not easy, you know?
No, it's
when
not.
But you know, in Uganda, why I feel like people entrepreneur is that when you meet a Ugandan and they're doing, let's say their business is fish farming, they'll start like, oh my God, the numbers.
Yeah, they tell you.
Oh, I'm making so much money. All you have to do is ABCD and you have millions.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Tomorrow, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
They neglect to tell you the bad.
There's so much hard work and like almost a science in fish farming as well to get it right. And although I surrounded myself with people that had the knowledge, it was a hard one. Yeah.
Okay.
And also you can't count them. It's not like chickens where you can go in and count them. you just throw in the feed and go, yep, there looks like there's some fish there. But like, you have no idea on the numbers. You have to do your catches and right. check and like do your averages and stuff. But it's not. It's
fish
not
farming an, oh, it didn't was work. Tough. It was Did you tough. Try something else after that?
I went straight into the plastics after that one. Yeah,
I thought you tried the chickens and then the Rolex business and then.
straight into plastics after that.
All right. Yeah. Before we get into that, your third song choice.
My third song choice. We're going to go with All the Small Things, Blink 182.
Okay.
Yeah. Bit of a different mix, I'm sure, than you're used to. Yeah.
FM, fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Disc, and that was Blink 182. I think you might just be the first guest to actually ask for a Blink 182 song.
Yeah.
So, Echo Bricks, is that, you said you went straight to plastics.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I think, there's a lot of, I think as you walk around, you see a lot of plastics lying around and it being burnt on the side of the street or in people's compounds or at the landfills and so forth. And I was just like, there's got to be a way to add value to this to create jobs. And job creation is what I'm now super passionate about. Because I believe, the only way to really empower someone is to give them money that they can spend however they want. And that's through creating jobs.
Right.
So the NGO world,
pause. I like that you said that because I was confused on how you're giving them money. You're like, the best way to empower someone is to give them money that they can choose what to do with.
Yeah.
But that what you mean is creating jobs.
Creating
I love
a job,
that.
Yeah,
I love
for, that the, for them to be able to earn the money that is their money. It doesn't come with restrictions or anything else.
Work, give them work.
And the NGO sector restricts people quite a lot sometimes, and and I've become a bit disillusioned with a lot of the NGO space. There's lots of trainings run and it's sort of a repeat of the same thing over and over
again.
A
template that nobody has figured to change.
Yeah, which not much really happens. And they don't necessarily create a lot of jobs. And there's a few really nice jobs, but then the money doesn't trickle down to the actual sort of grassroots, as they would term it. But yeah, just allowing people to earn, and then after a little bit of looking around and finding there was already an existing value chain for plastic.
That's recycling.
Yeah, recycling. So there's some amazing factories in and around Kampala that process huge sums of plastic waste. And all of that plastic is brought per kg. But there wasn't anything happening in Masaka or a lot of the southern region at the time. And I was like, we can definitely collect the plastic here, transport it into Kampala, and we add value, then they add further value, and we create this value chain that means anyone can earn from plastic collection. And that's what it started. And we started by just, like I said, I'm not academic, so it was a very practical start. So I put a sign on my garden gate that just said, I'll buy plastic. And I think it was super cheap at the time because I didn't understand it all. I think it was like 250 shillings a kg. And I had 2 tons in my garden at the end of the first month. And I was like, okay, so people are willing to do it. And that was a very low price. So if I can really figure out the chain and figure out what price we can offer, then...
So you just put up from 250 to something.
Yeah, once you know the value chain, you can do that.
You know how much you can give.
Yeah, so now we're buying at 600, 700, 800, 1,500, depending on the types of plastic.
Right.
And people can really earn a living from it.
So and just to break it down for the listener, when we say that, it might sound like, oh, also, you know, bougie in English. But what you really mean is pick the plastic of any kind off the street or of your community, bring it to me. That's literally it.
A
plastic bottle, I don't know what, and just bring it to me.
And I'll
figure out the rest of the chain.
Yeah, and we figure out the rest, yeah. And we've set up multiple, what was called a buyback center. So that just means you bring your plastic and you get instant cash because bringing it directly to our site is a challenge for some. So it's not easy to get it. But there's now, it's like 50.
Right, access.
So we motivate with money and we make it convenient.
That's sustainable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then convenient by the location in trading centers and marketplaces. And there's like 50 plus now buyback centers.
50?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're establishing more.
And is this like a proper center setup or is like someone's shop and then you'll say, okay, they can access you, they can bring it here?
Yeah, it's very simple. It doesn't have to be a major setup at all. It's just a set of weighing scales, a receipt book, and you can kick it off.
Wow.
And some ton bags, which are the big bags to collect it.
They must like you. I mean, that's easy.
Yeah.
That's an easy way of making money.
Yeah. It's doing really well. I think at the last count, it's about 300, and I'm going to get the figure wrong, but it was about 385 people that were earning above the minimum wage in Uganda just through delivering us plastic.
Okay.
And then there's another 2,500 plus people that just deliver random amounts and are doing it around other jobs. But yeah, we're growing and growing. So the more plastic we get now, we're trying to add value to it. So
what does that mean though?
Yeah, that means either crushing it, so sorting it, segregating it into its different
types. Of course, yeah.
And then crushing it and cleaning it, which turns it into just a flake. So you can imagine lots of crushed up bottles, for instance, all turned into a flake. And that is a raw material for recycling further down the value chain.
Right.
So that comes into Kampala, or sometimes we even export that material, which sounds...
Because I was going to say, I mean, then it's more lucrative if you've added that sort of value to it.
Yeah. So we're adding value again to make the whole chain sustainable. Or the other type of plastic, sort of the bottle lids and the security caps.
Yeah.
Those are a different type of plastic to the bottle itself. And that we can turn into an eco lumber, which is a replacement for wood. So like the desk we're sitting at now, that could be made out of the plastic. We've made boats, fishing boats. We've done large scale agricultural products, like huge nursery bed spaces, big cow sheds. We've built small structured housing. You name it, water decks, anything that can be made of wood, we can now do out of 100% recycled plastic, which is really exciting.
I read Eco Bricks. I was so sure it's a story about bricks.
Yeah. No, that was probably a premature
phase one.
Premature name, and it sort of stuck. So We were going down the brick route and making a sound plastic brick composite, but it didn't quite figure out. We do paving slabs now, and we make sort of interlocking bricks out of panels, so we can do the houses. But now it's become a lot more than just bricks. Yeah, for sure.
But the name stuck.
The name stuck. we had done the branding; it was already out, and now you know we're building zero waste communities. So the bricks element still has a link.
Right. Because when I read that in the beginning, and it said passionate about creating green jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be so easy for me to just pick up a plastic bottle and bring it to you. But if I'm in a community where you're doing this, just like with anything in green, you need to. It's part of the point of keeping our world green is to actually educate people. Because if they don't understand it, then we're just in a cycle or a loop. As the community understanding why you're doing it, it's a paycheck.
So there's two things. Whenever we go into a new community, we do run programs often targeting with the LC1 or local churches and those places where people gather. And we run a training sort of program there. Mm-hmm. But what we believed in is making sure that training doesn't become what we call shelved knowledge.
Yes.
So it's something you've learned and then it goes up on the shelf because you actually don't have any way to action what you're
learning.
To
relate it back to your normal life.
Yeah, so we directly, as soon as we've trained, we only train in places where we're setting up a buyback center. Mm. So then there's a buyback center that people can immediately start earning from. And there's capital there for them to make sure it can be immediately accessed as soon as the training's finished.
Oh.
We go, who's going to collect up the bottles here? If anyone bought bottles,
take them
there and you'll get money. And then someone does that.
That's what it means.
Oh, straight away. Like, now I understand the dangers of how plastic doesn't biodegrade and all of those challenges. But now I also understand how I can take action on it.
Yes.
And that for me is the most important part because, a lot of trainings are done and then you walk out and you're basically actively forgetting what you've learned on your walk home.
Because waiting for that big moment for you to apply your knowledge and you're like, the whole time you could have just picked up something.
You're there, and this way you can do it right away.
Right. Yeah. Is it hard, though, to get people to understand?
I think because there's a value chain, that makes it easier. I think if we weren't offering the motivation of money, and we're just saying, please
get the plastic off your city.
Yeah, please gather the plastic and bring it to us without any motivation. That would be a lot harder to message to push. But because we're offering that...
I don't know. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, there is a value chain. And then I always give the example of back in the West, for instance. My missus just completed a master's at a big university in the UK. And when I was visiting there, they all have these lovely recycling bins set up everywhere at the university. And, you know, these are master's students, sort of fully aware. They're all, lots of them are studying environmental components. And I'd look in those bins and so much mixed waste. It was never, like, perfectly segregated. Mm-hmm. And then you would see the bin truck coming to collect. All of the bins go in one thing.
Mm.
Like, the recycling system is sort of asking people to segregate their waste when they're only doing it out of their knowledge, not out of personal gain.
Yes.
Just doesn't work. And a clear example is we've shipped plastic material to the UK because the recycling factories in the UK are not getting enough plastic from within the UK systems because so much of that is contaminated with everything else.
Uh-huh.
And if there's one bit of contaminant, they take it all to landfill. Or it gets shipped to Indonesia. So there's some amazing things to watch out there around.
A little bit of money goes a long way.
It goes a long way to really...
It's like I know what I should do, but because you're paying me, I will definitely do it.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. So you even need a consequence of fines and like legislation to make people do things en masse, or you need to just motivate through money.
And we all know that the consequences of saying we'll punish us if we drop waste here, that never works.
Yeah, it's hard to.
It hasn't worked anyway.
It's hard to enforce.
I'd shudder to think we're on radio and the law might be hearing us. Like, and they say, oh, is that what it takes? What's your next song choice?
My next song choice, I'm sure it'll be one that no one's picked again. Let me see what I got. I've got You Somebody by Kings of Leon. It's a new one.
Yes.
Yeah, I realise that my choices are unique.
many faces fill the places I can't reach. You know that I can use somebody. You know that I can use somebody. Someone like you and all you know and how you speak. Countless lovers undercover of the street. You know that I can use somebody. You know that I can use somebody.
FM, fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Disc, and yes, might be the first time we've had Kings of Leon playing here on Desert Island Disc, but yes, Andrew Bounds, your request there. As we got into the last segment, so Echo Bricks has been there for that many years. COVID came, you said, so you were operating during COVID.
Yes,
we did. You take a hit?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that took us a hit, but because we work in waste management, we were able to, after a while, continue to work. Mm. So we had special licenses, and we actually became part of the core thing of the COVID task force in Masaka, because we re-diverted a lot of our income into COVID prevention. So we supported Masaka Referral Hospital to fix up the oxygen plant, build the isolation unit, and all of those things, especially when, you know, the world was reporting that completely wrongly, we're reporting that everything was going to go wrong when COVID hit East Africa and stuff, which was not the case. Obviously, nope. It was actually very few cases.
It was shocking.
But at that time we really tried to support where we could.
Yeah, I remember when people were saying that. I don't get that. Does East Africa just know how to wash their hands better than everybody else? How come they're not, you know, it's probably the food, guys. The food that we eat.
I think that's a big thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, nice organic food.
Yep. Yep.
So you've mentioned a couple of times, you said girlfriend, actually.
Yeah.
Not wife. You said girlfriend. I almost said your wife, but then I remembered. Ugandan?
Kenyan.
Okay.
Kenyan.
Okay, you're supporting the region.
Yeah, supporting the region.
You live here, you've got somebody from Kenya.
Yeah, she lives and works here.
Oh, she lives and works here, in Masaka.
Now in Masaka, yeah, I managed to drag her to
you
the village.
Moved, you're about to move everybody to Masaka.
Yeah. It's seriously, it's an amazing place, and it's picking up a lot.
Yeah,
I know people think of it as the village, but it's got some.
Although,
great
Although Andrew, spaces. For some people, it is their village. So when they say I'm going to the village, they're literally going, you know, to Masaka.
But it's now Masaka City. Don't forget this. It's Masaka City. It's got.
What's changed from the first time you came to Masaka?
So much. So much has changed. So I think there was like. Yeah, now all the roads are new. It's got, you know, it's got the solar streetlights across. It's got the big shopping mall now in the centre that wasn't there before. City View.
I clearly haven't been there in a while.
It's got, yeah, lots of clubs that would fit in so well in
Kampala.
In Kampala, yeah. And like Troma's is the most famous one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's picked up a lot. A real lot in the time I've been there.
You mentioned in the beginning. You said, listen, I knew from the get-go, I wasn't entrepreneurial. It's not like I was born a businessman and knew how to do it, when to do it. But here you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You just did.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Like I think like a lot of, especially in the UK, a lot of education sort of tries to push you to be in a little box. But then you can realize that as long as you surround your people with people that have the knowledge that you don't have, you can achieve anything. Like no one can do anything on their own.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough to build a team of people where we share like a lot of different knowledges together into a melting pot that has built EcoBricks. And you don't need to know everything to step into an industry and do something about it. So
and are you then saying, what I'm hearing you say also is that when you say I'm a businessman, you don't necessarily say that I do everything, that I founded, I started, you just have the idea.
Yeah.
And you can say, we could do this.
Yeah.
And then have people who can actually execute it.
Exactly.
For somebody who's listening who probably thought like you or thinks like you and knows I am not, quote unquote, a businessman or a businesswoman, what would you say about, even when you have the concept or the idea, what would you say in running it, that the kind of skill, even if soft skill, that they would need to equip themselves with?
Yeah.
To be that person.
I would say one of the things, you should do something that you're very passionate about, because it won't be easy. It'll be a very rocky road.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't come easy to set up any business and to keep it sustainable. But so yeah, that passion has to drive you through the tough times. And then, yeah, you've got to surround yourself with people and policies and systems. So that would be my biggest advice, is set up your systems and policies from the start. Make sure your business partners are people that you can grow the entity with. So, I'm a co-founder. I co-founded it with James Sendegay, or Father James Sendegay, I should say, because he's a priest in Masaka. And we've been able to build it together by having that strong connection.
Right.
And another partner in the UK, Georgina Elliott, who's now a silent partner, but she used to live in Masaka. Yeah. And that allowed us to really build it. But I would say, yeah, you surround your core people are literally the ones signing the documents at the start of your constitution and everything else. Make sure they're the people that you can travel with. And then you surround yourself with the skill sets that you need.
Right.
But your policies and your systems are absolutely key. So so I would say, learn how to write a good policy. which is, there's so many templates online, and you can then adjust and
what
change
fits
it.
For you
yeah,
and your
what
business.
Fits for your business.
I mean, I get that I can find a template and what system I can put in my business, because also we're not starting anything new. There's no point at which you're starting anything new. Somebody's done it, you're just going to adapt. However, when it comes to people, I'd like to just sort of pick your brain on. It's given that even when you were working as a clown, you kind of were working with people, always working with people.
Yeah.
You can have partners. I've done business where you're like halfway the years, you're like, wait, how did I read you wrong?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How did I read this person so wrong that we're at this point and we don't click? And I think that sometimes scares people, because finding people with money could be easy. And money isn't the only reason you need to have partners, unfortunately. And how do you read?
Yeah, no, people? Well, I think that's very, very tough. But it's easier to build a business relationship off the strong backbone of a policy
Okay.
and a constitution. Mm-hmm. So you literally write that as you're bringing on board those people. Sorry. And then what that does is allow you to grow from there.
So it's not like I like you, then we start a business.
No.
Okay.
If that relationship breaks down, you fall back to that base of policies right. And go, okay, what does the policy say about us having a fight around this?
Okay.
And you both sign that, and that's the legal. And then you go, okay, we've got to act in this way.
Yes.
And you just tick off one box by one box by one.
Right.
And it allows you to continue. Because you're right. Otherwise, yeah.
The emotions will always, you know.
Yeah. And sadly, in any part of the world that you're operating in, if the systems will always be manipulated by a few people and different things. So you've just got to have as much as possible that concrete base that allows you to go, okay, we're falling.
How are we supposed to do
stopping
this?
Her.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great insight. That's great insight. So what's the dream future? You know, you're doing EcoBase, you're creating green jobs, you're doing those amazing things in Masaka. I heard you say other regions. Are you moving out of Masaka?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the goal will be, we're not going to try and penetrate into Kampala.
Okay.
Like I say, there's huge processes here. But what there is lacking is processes like we are in Masaka, mm-hmm. where we can collect, and we've set up buyback centers in Mbarara and Kibali.
Yes.
We're going to in Fort Portal. Mm. And then the plan is to shift up into the north, into Gulu, Arua, and Lira, and that area, which is huge cities up there with very little plastic waste collection. Mm-hmm. On a big scale, there's some great projects up there, but on a big scale, we could come in. And then also out in the west. So right. I'm heading to Mbali on Friday.
Okay.
And we're partnering with a big organization in Kampala, a big recycler, to take over their baling site in that area. So yeah, just expanding and expanding to, and then create more jobs. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
It's
the goal. So.
And you're definitely staying in Uganda, I don't think.
Yeah. I love Uganda. So it'll be,
has your family come over to visit us in our country? What
do they
think?
Have. So, they absolutely love it.
Right? Yeah.
They're blown away by every element of it. So my mum and dad have come a few times.
Okay.
Last year, I was able to get all my brothers out at the same time.
Good.
I've got four of us in total, and they all came out, which was incredible. And we went on a trip, and we went to Lake Bunyoni, we went to Queen Elizabeth, and they obviously came to Masaka and saw everything as well. And they're just blown away by the beauty and the people, yeah.
Well, good stuff. Well done on creating green jobs.
Thanks.
And I'm going to use that line about you've got to give people money that they can use anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why giving them a job. That's like the best way to describe it. Well, EcoBricks, look for them. If you're ever in Masaka, where exactly in Masaka?
We are in Chigamba. We're behind Masaka Referral Hospital.
Okay, that's easy. We'll find you.
Yeah.
So if you're ever in Masaka, please find Andrew and say a big hello. And if you picked plastic anywhere in your way, I think he said 50. How many areas?
There's 50 buyback centers.
That's what you call them. So they can actually go there. But it's been a pleasure hearing your story.
Thank you, Fabio.
What's your final song choice?
Final song will be Viva La Vida from Coldplay. Yeah, one. That one is known.
We all know that one. It's a good choice as well, though. Coldplay doesn't go wrong. It's good stuff there. Well, thank you so much, Andrew Bounds from EcoBricks, for sharing your story. And that's it for Desert Island Discs. Have a good night.
Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.